I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The McNeil and Parkin Show.
I was listening to the McNeil and Parkin Show.
Afternoons on the Score.
What is that you've got written on your helmet?
Born to kill, sir.
You write born to kill on your helmet and you wear a peace button. What's that supposed to be, some kind of sick joke?
No, sir.
What is it supposed to mean?
I don't know, sir.
You don't know very much, do you?
No, sir.
You better get your head and your ass wired together, or I will take a giant on you.
Yes, sir.
Now answer my question, or you'll be standing tall before the man.
I think I was trying to suggest something about the duality of man, sir.
The what?
The duality of man, the Jungian thing, sir.
Whose side are you on, son?
Our side, sir.
Don't you love your country?
Yes, sir.
Then how about getting with the program? Why don't you jump on the team and come on in for the big win?
Yes, sir.
Son, all I've ever asked of my Marines is for them to obey my orders as they would the word of God. We are here to help the Vietnamese because inside every there is an American trying to get out. It's a hardball world, son. We've got to try to keep our heads until this peace craze blows over.
Aye, aye, sir.
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on the Score.
We are delighted you're with us on this now sunny Friday afternoon, Memorial Day weekend in Chicago. Parkins has the day off. I'm Dan McNeil. Mark Grody, our teammate, kind enough to sit in. We're on the air until 6 tonight. And with Memorial Day weekend, we thought it would be a good time with no sports going on as well to stretch our leg and talk, stretch our legs and talk a little bit. Yeah, we get to it, Meech. And talk a little bit about war pictures. And when I talk movies with Michael Phillips, the film critic from the Tribune, I am always exhilarated because he has such a passion for his craft. And often we agree. So he's a very smart film goer and writer. And he joins us right now on the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Alpamonte Ford is located in Melrose Park. Good afternoon, Michael. Thanks for the time. How are you feeling today?
Good, Dan, Mark. Nice to be with you guys.
We appreciate the time. I want to know, before I get your medal stand of favorite war movies of all time, why a couple pictures I consider to be war films are not on. I've been looking at lists all day of the best 10 war movies all day, and I can't find anyone who will consider The Imitation Game with Benedict Cumberbatch from 5 years ago, or The Pianist with Adrian Brody, because they are events in those films that are peripheral to the war but very much related to the war. Do you consider those to be war pictures?
Beautifully put. Why are you even wasting your time with me? I mean, that was an excellent point. I think you got wartime. The distinction, I suppose, is wartime films and then actual combat battle setting war films. And those are big distinctions in a way. And I think in a lot of ways people neglect the wartime picture because of the natural kind of idea that you lean toward what's actually in the heat of battle. You know what I mean? And I think that's, especially around Memorial Day, I think it's ridiculous not to look at the wider context in a movie like, I mean, look, one of my favorites is The Best Years of Our Lives, and that there's not a single second of combat in that, except every minute of it, because of these three guys who are coming home from World War II, and fighting their own battles in every direction for 3 hours. And that film remains just hugely moving to me. And that's the kind of film I want to see on Memorial Day as much as any other kind of, quote, exciting war picture, unquote.
You know, and the antithesis of that then would be Saving Private Ryan, at least to me, where the battle and the realism at that point took it to what I thought was another level. To watch that felt devastating and graphic and scary. Has there ever been a war movie that did it better than Saving Private Ryan in terms of bringing you what maybe they were feeling when they invaded that beach?
Yeah, I mean, that's the first 15 minutes is some of the toughest, most graphic recreation we've ever seen, especially in an American film, especially by kind of an A-list director like Spielberg, who went that far that early in a picture just to sober people up right away. Like, okay, we're not going to sugarcoat this. I like that film. I don't really love that film, I got to say. Maybe it's the kind of thing I don't revisit all that often for reasons, because it's not an easy film. But in another way, I wonder if it, from my taste, if it isn't a little easy toward the end, when it becomes a kind of a more traditional, conventional Hollywood version of events, and kind of a triumphal, happy ending. Even this is before you get to the epilogue, you know, the modern day epilogue. I don't know. I remember talking about that film with my dad, who's, you know, like a lot of my family, you know, a veteran, and he didn't serve in a war, but he was in the Army for a long time, and, you know, went through West Point, and, you know, I got veterans of every war and on both sides of the family, practically. My dad did not fight, but he had no taste for the end of Saving Private Ryan. And other people I know who came out of that military background was more like, eh, you're just sending in the cavalry for a happy ending. And, you know, it's the kind of thing that audiences probably felt like they deserved or needed after that harsh, really rough opening of Saving Private Ryan. But to me, they belong to two different movies. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I absolutely understand that. No question about it. Were you rooting for 1917 to win this year's Oscar?
No. To me, that was like video gaming your way through a movie. I didn't really like it. I really didn't. And it's too bad, because I think it's great core material, and I think World War I has given us some of the great, truly greatest war films. If you look at All Quiet on the Western Front, if you look at Paths of Glory, another Kubrick film, along with what we just heard from Full Metal Jacket, right? Kubrick's Paths of Glory is, I think, the great World War I picture. I think 1917 is pretty minor compared to those two. And when I say a movie shouldn't be, a war movie shouldn't be that much, quote, excited, fun, unquote. I think the problem with 1917 is that it's really just like you're gaming your way to the next level of kind of a thin story. And I'm not saying it's dull, and I'm not saying it's poorly made. I'm just saying it's not my kind of war picture, especially around this time of year.
I didn't care for any characters until very late. They didn't make me hurt for anybody until very, very late. And then they changed who our main character was 20 minutes in, too. Somebody's wiped out.
I guess the counter argument would be, you know, it's a panoramic picture. It's not really meant to get you too close or really behind the eyes of everybody. It's really more about just recreating this blur, this frenzy of experience under fire for the audience, which, again, that's a different kind of objective. I don't necessarily, you know, share it. I mean, I there's a lot of movies this time of year that I find myself recommending around Memorial Day or Veterans Day, like something like The Steel Helmet, a Korean War film by Sam Fuller. Terrific. Very few people know it now. And that's just a really small, efficient, vivid picture. And I don't know, sometimes it's those smaller ones that do get you closer to the characters on screen. Even something like Lone Survivor. Did you see the Mark Wahlberg film, Lone Survivor?
Yes, I did.
That's one of the better pictures, I think, that came out of the whole Iraq War and Afghanistan conflict cycle. You know, not on the more kind of on the A-list end I do think that the two Catherine Bigelow films that come to mind, Hurt Locker and Zero Dark Thirty, are pretty damn good. And to me, they both give you exactly that down-the-middle, relatively apolitical line of like, okay, this is not a polemic. It's not for the lefty audiences or the right-wing audiences. It's really just about, you know, what was it like? And you can kind of debate policy and context, you know, amongst yourselves later. And sometimes I think that's the way to go. Black Hawk Down, to me, was like that, too, Ridley Scott's film. That's a really immersive, exciting, but sort of in the right way, disturbing exciting, not just fun exciting war film where it just, you know, puts you through hell and does make you question things like the, you know, the mission itself and the tactics, but in a really kind of a higher level way for me.
I love Zero Dark Thirty too. I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, it shows everything in modern day warfare and the obviously the killing of Osama bin Laden and the torture and just what everybody went through then. I thought that was wonderful. But a little bit of a switch here now too. There have been many war movies made centered on the Vietnam War. Is there one that stands out to you as being better than the others, or did you like that genre of, because it's its whole own genre, it feels like, the Vietnam movies.
And it really got going about 10 years after, well, when did it get going? I mean, they really got going in the late 70s, you know,
Apocalypse,
and that
was
well, it was even before that, though. I would say if you look at the timeline, it's more like the Coming Home and the Deer Hunter the same year, 78, I think. And I got to say, as gripped as I was by both those films at the time, you know, and I was pretty young, but old enough to be into film pretty heavy, I don't really know if The Deer Hunter or Coming Home are really lasting masterpieces. I don't. And I think it's because of what we just talked about the polemic thing. I think, for me, it's hard not to be just gripped by The Deer Hunter's most, you know, kind of visceral scenes, even though they're historically totally full of shit, actually. But, but I find that the Deer Hunter is playing to the peanut gallery on the right, and I find that Coming Home is sort of a sop to the left. And I'm not sure no matter how much good acting there is in both those films, I don't know if those in 10, 20, 30 years are going to stand up with Paths of Glory, Best Years of Our Lives. I don't know. What about for you guys?
I am a Saving Private Ryan guy. I call Platoon my favorite war picture.
That's really good.
Yeah, it's one I watch over and over. It's not my favorite genre by a long shot, but Michael, I'm a film guy. I'm a film guy who is pissed off that the television industry has been kicking film in the ass for a long time
now. I know.
So to avoid watching comic books, I go to see war movies because they are continuing to make them in mass.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, and we're going to get two more coming up. I mean, who knows how they're going to be, but this Tom Hanks film, the submarine film, 742, Greyhound, that's coming up soon. Spike Lee's film, Defy Bloods, is coming up, and that's a Vietnam picture. Again, very different kinds of films. We'll see them both, I think, in June. And, you know, as you said at the top, If you can expand your idea of what a war film is to talk about, every kind of a wartime story there is to tell, that's many, many years of 20th century history, let alone the other centuries. And, you know, you can learn a lot from all of them. I mean, you can learn a lot just by looking at a movie that's internally really divided, really good stuff up against less good stuff, like Glory, Civil War film. Mm-hmm. Every time Denzel Washington and Morgan Freeman get to tell their story, which is, you know, the meat of that story is about the black regiment. I mean, that's the truth. And then, you know, you have to kind of just settle for the less interesting story of how Matthew Broderick became a man. You know, I mean, that's a film that's internally as divided as the damn nation was in 19, in 1861. And, you know, I still recommend it because of the scenes with Washington and Freeman. I mean, that's where the story is. But that's also, that film's a real indication of how Hollywood makes these movies sometimes. They had to get what they thought was a bankable actor in the front, in the middle of what is essentially a, quote, black, unquote, story. And, of course, that actor was white.
In the name of expanding the view of what a war movie is, and one that had a comic twist to it, Inglourious Basterds. Did you like Inglourious Basterds?
that's the most serious of all. But I mean, you know, it's fun to see Hitler go down. There's films that they don't all look. I mean, if you really want to talk about black comedy that means something to me personally, I mean, I go back to Altman's MASH. I go back to, my God knows, I go back to Kubrick's Dr. Strangelove, which is technically, right, a war film. And I think even in a realm like The Great Escape, 63, Steve McQueen, I mean, that's a fairly, would you say, unserious war picture. It's more just like a really engaging adventure that happens to be based a little bit on truth. And it's just kind of endlessly entertaining. And it's also got the greatest damn musical theme ever written, practically. You know, that, I mean, just for the march, I pay $12.50, you know. But
it takes you the weekend to watch it, though, Michael.
What's that?
It'll take you the weekend to watch it.
Yeah, right. It's long. It's a longish film. I think it runs as long as the war did. I think it's actually got a 4 or 5 year running time. But that film is what it is. You can't look at a movie like The Great Escape, or God knows, Inglourious Basterds, or any of those, and expect it or want it to be a serious, sobering, docudrama. It's up to other things, you know. I guess another film I really think that people have never given a shot at is one of my favorite Eastwood films, Letters from Iwo Jima. Did you ever see that?
I've not seen that one. No,
I've not. No.
You know, it's dealing with the Iwo Jima story from the Japanese side, and it's, you know, he made it as a kind of a companion piece to Flags of Our Fathers, which is a pretty amazing venture when you think about it. Those two films made almost in tandem, and neither one of them very big box office performers, which is interesting with Eastwood because he knows how to make a hugely popular war film. He did it with American Sniper, but you know, I find more to really chew on with those Iwo Jima films, especially Letters from Iwo Jima. That's where I think he's really dealing with the cost of it all. And I guess, honestly, the older I get, guys, I don't know how much I have in me to kind of just enjoy a hell of a lot of recreational killing on screen. So that kind of war film has to be done really, really well for me to kind of just get into it, you know. And so, I mean, I don't know. Am I just becoming kind of a humorless old man? Is that the problem?
I don't think that. I think we get mellow. We want to feel good, right? The older you get, you want to be caressed by a film. Give me the human condition.
Kind of, although I guess, I don't know, man. I might work the other way. I mean, I think if a film doesn't sort of make you eat it a little bit, if it's a war film, I'm not sure I buy it, but, on the other hand, when I think of what MASH meant to me, you know, when I was 13, and kind of still does. I mean, that's a Korean War film that clearly is actually a Vietnam War film because it was made during the Vietnam War. But and nobody's haircut, Elliot Gould's hair did not exist in the Korean War. I'm sorry, but that's very 70s hair. But I mean, that film still. I mean, talk about an influential war film. That film just set the template for a whole style of black comedy and dealing with, you know, more carnage than people said. There happened to be operating room carnage, but more carnage than people had ever seen in a war film up to that point. And it just happened to be in the context of this crazy black comedy that, you know, still, I mean, we're all a little familiar with it now, especially thanks to the endless reruns of the series version. But, you know, that if you go back to the movie, that's a pretty tough minded picture. And in its way, it does remind you that, you know, this is serious business.
Michael, one of our Go ahead, Dan.
No, you go ahead. You go ahead, Mark.
I was going to say one of our texters mentioned Good Morning Vietnam, but I think of that as way too much. That was like the Robin Williams show. I mean, it was a war movie. I don't think of it as a war movie. I think of it as Robin Williams being funny on a PA system, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of, I haven't seen that. You know, I never saw that after I saw it when it came out back in, what, 87 or so?
That sounds
and,
about
and
right.
I remember, yeah. Yeah, I remember enjoying it a lot, but never seeing it again. And I just wonder if the semi-improvised scenes with Williams at the mic on air were kind of the whole movie. And the rest of it just seemed a little more of a fraud to me. You know what I mean? Even though it's based on a real guy. But yeah. I don't know. Look, we haven't talked about Apocalypse Now, which I do think, even though I think, I still don't think the ending works. But, you know, I'm only the 9 millionth guy to say that. But that film is staggering to me. To me, that film, of that group you're talking about, of Vietnam Pictures, Deer Hunter, Coming Home, everything else made in that sort of late 70s, early 80s cycle, Apocalypse Now, the best scenes in that, well, no one's ever made them before or since. And I think that is a film that gets, you know, there's enough black comedy right up against really, really harsh stuff. I think the first two-thirds, three-quarters of that film is just amazing.
Yeah, I agree. And Brando, too. Just terrific. Michael, always enjoy catching up. Thank you so much for giving us some time today. Enjoy your Memorial Day weekend, man.
Thank you. You too, guys. Be well, and we'll talk again.
You bet. Yeah. Take care. That's Michael Phillips, the longtime film critic for the Chicago Tribune.
Okay. Picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.